going out into the Alabama to try to encourage black farmers to go to vote despite the threat, serious threat of being murdered and being murdered themselves. Now, these were some, this is examples of what humans can do and have done, and we see many signs of it today, and that's the basis for hope.
Noam Chomsky, world-renowned political dissident, linguist, author, speaking to us from Tucson, where he is now sheltering at home. Laureate professor, University of Arizona, taught at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology for more than half a century. That does it for our show. Amidst the pandemic, we still want to wish a very safe and healthy birthday to Democracy Now!'s David Prud, Anna Uzbek, and Maria Tarasena. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. A majority of our amazing team is working from home. Thanks to all. I'm Amy Goodman. Be safe.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland, no compromise in defense of the truth.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to News Director, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon health workers face a dual threat, Multnomah County extends the state of emergency for an additional 90 days, and the coronavirus self-checker is launched in Portland. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 10th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. Residents of the greater Portland area have a new online risk assessment tool that allows residents to check potential COVID-19 symptoms from home. The tool was designed to relieve some of the traffic to the 911 emergency line and can be found online at c19oregon.com. It also serves as an early warning system that would alert health officials if a surge is coming. The service was developed by Vital Software and Emory University in Atlanta in collaboration with Portland Fire and Rescue. In a statement to Med India webpage, Rich Chapman, Public Information Officer of Portland Fire, said, quote, "During the surge of COVID-19 cases, emergency medical teams will have difficulty getting to those most in need of assistance because we will be inundated by the mild and moderately sick," end quote. He said the objective was to be able to quickly identify the sickest individuals so that they could be best prepared with personnel and equipment to serve them. The landing page for the coronavirus checker notes that the tool is based on best clinical practices, CDC guidelines, illness severity, and risk factors like age and pre-existing conditions. Users can do a self-assessment in one of 15 languages by walking through a series of questions. The site is up and running now, and concerned individuals are urged to do a self-assessment. Once again, the coronavirus checker can be found at c19oregon.com. On Thursday, Multnomah County extended the state of emergency for an additional 90 days in an effort to continue the slow of the spread of coronavirus. County commissioners voted unanimously in favor of the extension, which also includes the moratorium on residential evictions in place for another 90 days. Both the county and the city of Portland have declared that residents cannot be evicted for not paying rent while under a state of emergency, with violators facing fines of $1,000 per offense per day. The guidelines say that rent owed to a landlord will continue to accrue during the emergency, with a six-month repayment grace period following its end. Multnomah County Chairperson Deborah Cafori's original state of emergency was announced on March 11th, and it was set to expire today. Cafori told K2, quote, "Extending this emergency declaration acknowledges that the health and safety of our community remains under threat from this global pandemic. The county will also be using this time to mobilize help in feeding households, provide free motel vouchers for victims of domestic violence, and to reorganize beds at temporary shelters to assist in keeping people further apart. The new end date for the state of emergency is July 9th, assuming the spread of novel coronavirus drops off and becomes manageable." Updated predictions from the University of Washington have determined that Oregon is less than 2 weeks from the peak of new cases of COVID-19. The report says the spike will hit about April 20th, but goes on to say that this is only an estimate and could shift. Original projections were for the peak of new infections to come mid-May, but the social distancing restrictions that were implemented on March 23rd appear to have had the desired effect. Sadly, the report goes on to project that over 170 Oregonians will die from the coronavirus by the end of May, and warns that any premature relaxation of the social distancing guidelines could result in increased infection and death rates. This morning's numbers come from the Oregon Health Authority. They show the state with 1,321 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 44 deaths statewide so far. To date, nearly 26,000 Oregonians have been tested for coronavirus, with nearly 95% testing coming back negative. Over 550 confirmed and suspected cases of COVID-19 are currently hospitalized, with 64 patients on ventilators. Health workers in Oregon are facing a dual threat from the coronavirus pandemic. According to data released by the Oregon Health Authority earlier this week, 14%, or nearly 1 in 7 confirmed cases of COVID-19 statewide, are of healthcare workers. In 3 out of 4 cases, the infections resulted from direct contact with a patient. Healthcare workers who spoke to Willamette Week said the high rate of infection is not surprising. There's an ongoing shortage of personal protective equipment, and many workers fear that it's nearly inevitable that they will become infected by the easily transmittable virus. And in a bizarre turn of events, the coronavirus epidemic has resulted in the temporary loss of jobs for many Oregon healthcare workers. On March 19th, Oregon Governor Kate Brown issued Executive Order 2010. Among other things, the order required that non-urgent healthcare procedures be stopped in order to conserve personal protective equipment and hospital beds. The resulting halt in elective procedures has seriously impacted the business for several of the state's healthcare providers. Yesterday, it was announced that Oregon Clinic, a quote, specialty healthcare provider in Portland, was temporarily furloughing 820 employees, or about 80% of its staff, during the coronavirus pandemic. Human resource representatives for the clinic have indicated that the layoffs are temporary, and they plan to begin rehiring when business returns to normal. Their current estimate is in June. The elimination of elective procedures has also hit rural hospitals in Oregon hard. According to an Associated Press report, the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems has seen a, quote, unprecedented decline in revenues of 40 to 60%. Hospitals and elected officials are calling for money from the $2 trillion CARES bailout package to be directed to these facilities, but there's no guarantee that that will happen. The bailout package does direct $100 billion of the package towards hospitals, but the concern is that a large percentage of that money will go to administrative costs associated with negotiation with private insurers and other bureaucratic costs. A new method of voting is being used by the Independent Party of Oregon in their 2020 primary election. Star voting, which stands for score, then automatic runoff, was first proposed by Mark Frohnmayer, who is also the founder of the Equal Vote Coalition. KBOO's Yasmin Kobanoglu spoke with Frohnmayer about star voting and how it could transform our elections.
A new voting system is being tested this year by the Independent Party of Oregon in their 2020 primary election. Star voting stands for score, then automatic runoff. Mark Frohnmayer, founder of the Equal Vote Coalition and the first to propose the concept of star voting, explains it like this.
So star voting it's a new voting system that we first started to characterize in 2014. And by voting method, what that really means is sort of how you cast your ballot, what the ballot looks like. So in a typical, our typical voting method is the plurality method or the choose only one, where you basically have a list of candidates and you pick one candidate that is your favorite candidate. What STAR lets you do is it lets you actually score each candidate on the ballot from zero, which means you don't support them at all, to five, which is the most support that you can give to any candidate in a race. So in a way, it's a lot like the STAR systems that are on Yelp or Amazon or Google, you know, that familiar five-star rating. And the way that the winner is determined, so STAR, again, is score, then automatic runoff. The winner is actually the majority favorite between the two highest scoring candidates. So in the first step of the count, all the scores are added up. The two highest scoring candidates are the finalists. And then your full ballot goes to whichever of those you gave a higher score, even if you gave a one, whether you gave a one or a two or a three or a four or five to the finalist you prefer, that finalist gets your full vote. So that's what that automatic runoff is. It uses the scores as both a level of support and then as a preference between the two highest scoring candidates.
Speaking about our current system of voting, Frohnmayer says it is inherently flawed.
There was something sort of deeply wrong with the way that we voted, and that's consistent with basically the broad consensus of election scientists, is that the way that we vote right now is the worst way of voting that humans have ever come up with, and is responsible for a lot of the polarization that we see in politics, a lot of the influence of money that we see in politics, and basically voters not getting what they actually want. And, you know, when I look at voting, it really is at the root of every single issue in politics. So whatever it is that you care about, where the will of the people is not matching up with what happens in terms of public policy, the vote is responsible for a big piece of that. And that's what really got me. You know, you can either put out all the fires on the fringes, or you can go right to the root of the problem. And that's really where I've seen voting, you know, voting reform as being going after the heart of the problem in our democratic process.
When it comes to the future of star voting, Frohnmayer says many localities are considering adopting the method.
Yeah, so we actually have active petitions down here in Lane County. The city council here in Eugene is considering putting it on the ballot as a result of the petition drive that we did in the fall. I believe there's an effort underway up in the Portland area. And, you know, but this will be the very first time that star voting is used in a binding political election.
Oregonians who are registered independents, as well as those who are unaffiliated with any party, are eligible to vote in the independent primary and will be able to try star voting for the first time. More information about the Equal Vote Coalition can be found at equal.vote, and more details about star voting can be found at starvoting.us. This is Yasmin Kobanoglu with the KBOO Evening News.
Oregon's Occupational Safety and Health Division has received over 2,700 complaints from workers over the last couple weeks. Complaints are coming in from office, factory, construction, grocery, and restaurant workers. They're worried about going to work during the coronavirus pandemic and feel that their employers are not protecting their safety. They feel that distancing and other safety measures are not being taken or are not being enforced in the workplace. Manufacturing and construction were specifically excluded from the governor's stay home, stay safe order, but those industries are still required to ensure that workers are maintaining safe distance from each other. According to OSHA spokesperson Aaron Korniv, the processing of an OSHA citation normally takes about 2 weeks, but efforts are underway to accelerate the process. The agency has enlisted 75 compliance officers to work on the citations and has pressed management and staff into service screening complaints. According to a new state report, Oregon's Latinx population appears to be disproportionately affected by COVID-19. Although Latinx people make up 13% of the state's population, they represent at least 18% of all positive cases, and potentially even more. Although figures are incomplete, no other racial or ethnic population in Oregon is testing positive for coronavirus at a rate so out of step with the share of the population. The senior health advisor for the Oregon Health Authority, Dr. Don Montner, said, quote, "We are certainly concerned about it and are certainly taking a lot of steps to prevent this and to continue to target and focus our efforts on this vulnerable population and others." Oregon health officials have also not yet agreed to reveal the race and ethnicity of those who have died from the virus, although they have said they are considering doing so. Democratic State Representative Teresa Alonzo Leon of Woodburn said the effect on Latinx people is made worse by their historically lower rates of health insurance and lack of access to health care. Alonzo Leon said in a statement, quote, "I have heard from constituents in my community who simply cannot afford to lose a paycheck as they were already struggling to stay afloat financially. Many mixed-status households do not want to visit a doctor due to the stories of colossal medical bills or fear that personal information will be given out to other governmental agencies." The city of Portland has opened 3 camps for homeless people in an effort to help the population who are among the most vulnerable in the COVID-19 outbreak. While Portland has long avoided creating city-sanctioned encampments, the increased need for hygiene and social distancing made the change important. Many homeless people have weakened immune systems and respiratory problems due to harsh living conditions, 2 qualities that increase their risk for worse outcomes with coronavirus. Each camp will house 45 people on 12x12 plots, with city-supplied tents and sleeping bags set up on platforms. The camps are operated by the nonprofit JOIN and funded by the Joint Office of Homeless Services. JOIN Executive Director Katrina Holland told the Oregonian, quote, "We've heard over and over that social distancing is critically important in slowing the spread of the virus. For our neighbors who haven't been able to access housing or shelter right now, we can't just leave them without any options." 2 homeless people in Multnomah County have tested positive for COVID-19 so far. People who are interested in reserving a space in the new campsites can call JOIN at 503-232-2031. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, then we'll hear Rising Up with Sonali, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, we can look forward to partly cloudy midday with a high of about 63. On this date, in 1981, imprisoned Irish Republican Army member Bobby Sands was elected to the British Parliament. Sands died while on a hunger strike in prison. Quote of the day is from Sands, who said, quote, "Guns don't win wars. Guns and bombs may kill a man, but they cannot make him follow their lead, nor will they ever coerce an unyielding man to yield." Oregon has temporarily blocked all hunting and fishing by non-residents, citing concerns about the continued spread of coronavirus. The ban does not apply to residents of the state. The action was taken to halt an anticipated influx of out-of-state anglers and hunters and will stay in place until the statewide stay-home, stay-safe restrictions are lifted. According to Kurt Melcher, the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the decision was driven by concerns from the coastal and rural communities who worry about the potential impact of COVID-19 on local medical and emergency services. Some communities had asked that seasons be closed entirely. But in a press release, Melcher said, quote, "We would like to keep seasons open to give locals an outlet during this difficult time, but that doesn't mean it's okay to travel to these communities," end quote. He urged residents to stay close to home and fish at local lakes, ponds, and rivers. The action by the Oregon DFW follows an action taken by the state of Washington, which closes all hunting, fishing, and shellfishing until at least early May. Yesterday, Portland Public Schools announced a pause in the distribution of Chromebooks. The decision was made in an effort to reduce the overwhelming number of parents that have been crowding the pickup sites. With distance learning programs scheduled to begin on Monday, parents and students faced waiting times upwards of 3 hours to check out the devices. The four scheduled pickup sites were the PPS district office and Roosevelt, Jefferson, and Franklin High Schools. In some cases, lines of people stretched for blocks, and vehicles were backed up for nearly a half mile, with one officer on site calling the long queues of people a train wreck. 6,000 devices have been picked up so far, with many in the last few days. The one-day halt on distribution is aimed at giving the district time to organize and sanitize all available devices, with computer loans set to resume on Monday, April 13th. With in-class sessions shuttered for the remainder of the school year, parents as well as teachers are trying to establish efficient online curriculum to keep students from falling behind. Some families did not anticipate needing a district-issued device, but had trouble accessing the online learning portal from their computers at home. Families lacking internet service and those with students with special needs are facing additional challenges in their efforts to keep up. The Oregon Department of Education has advised districts across the state to adopt distance learning programs by April 13th, having anticipated Governor Kate Brown's in-class closure extension issued earlier this week. Projections by the Department of Homeland Security and the Health and Human Services Department show that infections will spike if shelter-in-place orders are lifted after just 30 days. According to a report in the New York Times, three scenarios were run. In the most restrictive scenario, the report assumes that school remain closed until summer, 25% of workers telecommute, and a 30-day shelter-in-place order is implemented. The model shows, however, that lifting the shelter-in-place order after 30 days results in a second spike after the lifting of the order. President Trump has again started pushing the idea of reopening the United States for business, even as governors, medical professionals, and the government's Inspector General for Health and Human Services have warned of the continuing shortage of test kits, medical equipment, and PPE. With the economy in free fall and unemployment claims achieving a new record every week, economists have said that lifting restrictions on non-essential businesses will restore some activity to the economy. But others have pointed out that the economy is going to be slow to recover regardless, and the risk of a second or third wave from the coronavirus could be even more damaging. Top leaders of the Navajo Nation are in self-imposed quarantine after being exposed to the coronavirus by a first responder who later tested positive. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez and Vice President Myron Leiser are in self-quarantine after an exposure to an individual with COVID-19. The leaders were in close proximity Tuesday with a first responder who later tested positive. President Nez, in a virtual town hall Thursday, expressed they're both feeling well.
We're taking every precaution. We tell our employees, if you are in close proximity to a COVID positive patient, that they need to self-quarantine. And so there's nothing different about us as leaders, you know. We got to set the example.
Nez is urging residents to stay home as a 57-hour weekend curfew goes into effect Friday night. As of Thursday, there were 558 positive COVID-19 cases for the Navajo Nation and 22 deaths related to the coronavirus. On a press call with reporters this week, U.S. New Mexico Senator Tom Udall discussed efforts to pressure the Trump administration to swiftly implement the $2 trillion congressional COVID-19 relief bill, the CARES Act. Udall says he led a bipartisan letter from Congress urging the president to make sure federal agencies honor trust and treaty responsibilities to tribes.
This administration, when we pass legislation, their job is to implement this. and they're implementing under extraordinary circumstances, and they need to cut through the red tape and get this money out to where it's needed.
Udall says the Indian Health Service has started to distribute $600 million in funds, and the $8 billion relief slated for tribes is intended to go out by April 21st.
That's a good start, but given past issues on getting funds into Native communities quickly, we can't let up the pressure on this administration. Congress's intent is that all departments engage in quick and direct consultation with tribes on how to distribute the money.
Udall also raised concerns about providing immediate assistance to the Navajo Nation, Zia Pueblo, and San Felipe Pueblo, which have been hit hard. Alaska's governor has vetoed extra funding for state ferries, which coastal villages with large Alaska Native populations rely on. Kodiak Island Representative Louise Stute says the added money was designed to close service gaps, which led to shortages of food and other goods over the winter.
Certainly, communities are going to probably do with a little less service, but as long as they have service, sustainable service, I think that's a good target.
Governor Mike Dunleavy erased $13 million in extra operating cash approved by lawmakers. He also cut nearly $17 million for vessel upgrades. In explaining his veto, he reasoned Alaska's ferries would still have more money to run than last year.
You're going to see the Alaska Marine Highway System was the amount of money that the legislature put in, which was considerable. We vetoed it back, but there's still more money in it this year than there was last year, going into next year.
That angered coastal legislators like State Senator Jesse Keel.
We need a ferry system that moves people and commerce, and this governor is just against that. It is a vision for a collapse of the economy in coastal Alaska.
It's unlikely legislators will be able to override the vetoes. Alaska's legislature recessed early due to COVID-19. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Today is the deadline for ballots to be returned to the Alaska Democratic Party office in Anchorage. They're using vote by mail to try and expand the electorate, but the system alone does have some limitations. With more on the story, here's Lily Bulkey with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process.
If you pull up a map of Alaska, geographically, it's the biggest state. It is huge, and we have a lot of communities off the road system. We have communities with limited, you know, technology and infrastructures.
Lindsay Kavanaugh chairs the Democratic Party in Alaska, the biggest state geographically with the fourth smallest population. Today's the deadline for Democratic primary ballots to arrive at the party office in Anchorage. State Republicans had already decided last year to forego their contest in support of President Trump. Democrats initially scheduled an in-person primary for last weekend, but with the novel coronavirus outbreak, the party canceled in favor of just vote-by-mail and ballot drop boxes. Kavanaugh hopes that not being limited to the physical caucuses will boost participation from previous years.
It increased accessibility because, like I said, we had about 45 polling locations across the state, but Alaska is a huge state with a lot of little isolated communities, you know, so the decision went along with the intent, which is maximum participation.
Historically, both Republican and Democratic caucuses have had low turnout. The majority of Alaskans are political independents who don't vote in party primaries. The local elections will have their own ballots, but none of the voting this year will be in person. Legal strategist Shirog Baines from nonprofit Demos says going forward, it's critical for states to maintain some limited in-person options.
It's also extremely important for voters with disabilities who rely on electronic voting machines, machines that can read off the ballot to them.
In addition, Baines recommends early in-person voting to reduce crowding on a single election day, as well as curbside ballot drop-off.
Voters of color, Black voters, Latinx voters, Native American voters, vote by mail in much lower numbers. And some of that is because of having inferior mail service in communities of color. Some of it is because, certainly on reservations, addresses don't match up to the USPS address system, or people are sharing post office boxes and don't get reliable mail and have to drive many miles to get their mail in the first place. Some of it is because voters of color have less confidence in the mail voting system.
Baines says implementing the necessary measures to go along with vote by mail will require massive resources.
Voting by mail is convenient, it's secure, when there's infrastructure, it works. And so the claims that are being made about it, I think we need to understand them essentially as a form of vote suppression.
Although President Trump himself voted absentee in Florida's primary and in the 2018 midterms, he again called for party-line resistance to expanded mail-in voting, tweeting, quote, "Republicans should fight very hard when it comes to statewide mail-in voting. Democrats are clamoring for it."
By scaring us off vote by mail, the president will achieve a lower rate of participation in the election. And he believes, and he's probably right about this, that the fewer people vote, the better it is for him.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bulkey. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 10th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Jeffrey Wade, Ray Bodwell, Yasmin Kobanoglu, and Althea Billings. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez of National Native News and Lily Bulkey of 2020 Talks. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. The KBOO Evening News is a critical resource that is supported by our listeners. Contribute today by going online to kboo.fm/give and support your community radio station. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.